This week on the Linux Action Show,
we kick off our Linux home server build project and share with you our plans to make it a multimedia powerhouse. Then, lies, damned lies, and statistics. They all say Linux is dying. We debate the real reasons people are talking about Linux a whole lot less. All this week on the Linux Action Show.
And welcome, everybody, to the Linux Action Show, Season 13. What's that in Spanish, Chris?
Toys. No.
That didn't even sound Spanish.
No, I know.
Episode 2. My name is Brian. The retard next to me is, of course, Chris.
Hey, Brian. The Pogo plug runs Linux.
Sure does.
Now, you guys might remember the old Pogo plug. It looked kind of like a wall adapter.
It looked like a giant AC adapter brick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the old one. The new one now is rocking a much more refined style. It's got kind of like a, more mainstream consumer look to a little pink trimming.
By mainstream and consumer, Chris means girly and ridiculous.
They do have a pro version in the works, which will be colored a little better. This little Pogo plug, though, it does run Linux, and it is an FTP server, an SSH server, a Samba server.
Yep.
And it boasts the ability not to have to configure your firewall. You plug it in, and with a combination of their free service and UNPMP, it configures your router for you.
Nice.
And it can then stream like your media library to Androids, iPhones, Blackberries, TVs, stuff like that.
Awesome. I mean, that's a really cool set of features in a really disgustingly pink device.
Yeah.
It looks like an old, 1990s Macintosh with pink trimmings. Like someone got an old, G4 Mac and was like, oh, I want to give this to my 16-year-old daughter who only likes things that are Barbie princess. And so that's what they did.
I think they tried to go more mainstream now, because what's interesting is their business edition they're working on is going to be black-colored.
See, that's fine. I like the black color.
What's neat about it, the accomplishment with the Pogo plug is that
pink, look at that. And they even stick it right next to a Mac.
Well, that's kind of
the style.
With that glass acrylic, they're kind of going for that. But I'm more interested in the business edition will include access control lists, auditing features, all kinds of stuff, integration with LDAP and Active Directory.
That's cool. I dig that. Yeah.
And then you combine that with more of a more Linux file server type feature set. Now you're talking about a real device.
Now I'm excited.
So you guys, I'll put a link to that in the
show
notes.
Especially if it's not pink.
Right.
I'm not going to buy it when it's pink, Pogo plug.
So
I would love a review device. And if I guarantee you, we'll email them. And they're like, yeah, we'd love to get a review device on the show. They send us one. They send us the pink one. I'm positive of it.
Of course.
Just because they'd be jerks.
Of course.
I don't want a pink one.
That's right. We'll spray paint it and send it back. Yeah. Here you go. We made it better. How you feeling?
Decals of skulls on it and such.
Give the peeps an update on the Brian Health 2010.
Dude, I'm dying, man.
Yeah.
I'm not actually dying, but I'm hurting. I've been hurting all week.
I know. I said, take today off. I'll have Jeremy sit in. You said, no, I'll be here. I didn't realize you'd have to go sans painkillers to be here. That's hardcore.
Have you seen how pro I am?
Sans painkillers is tough.
My pro
though it might have been more
skills.
Fun. Doped up Brian might have been fun.
I actually thought about that, but my concern was driving here.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
I'm like,
right.
Okay, I do not know that I can get there and safely back home.
Fair.
Hopped up on all the painkillers.
What we should have done is move this recording schedule so you had time to get here, get doped up, record, and then sober up. Maybe we should have shot some Beer Is Tasty while you were doped up on painkillers.
I can't drink alcohol.
I know.
I've been without alcohol for 2 weeks.
I'm sorry, dude.
I'm probably going to be for a while, too.
That's some kind of brutal, dude.
Dude, this is hardcore. I can't take this, man. This is too hard for me.
I would say, that if nothing else, you should be able to have a little bit of fun. So have him start weaning you off the painkillers and be like, okay, doc, at what point can I start drinking booze again? And then let me know. That way I'm not because I've never tried it myself, but I've heard a little alcohol and painkillers is a good time. Just
never done that myself.
The Linux Action Show does not recommend.
The Linux Action Show chat room has been suggesting aromatherapy for me.
Nice, dude.
So I'm going to go home after this. I'm not going to take any painkillers.
Just aromatherapy. Light a candle, buddy.
I'm going to break out some potpourri, some nice vanilla flower scented candles. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have a nice girly bath.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to do. Actually, that sounds phenomenal.
Now,
I was just about to make fun of that, but I'm like, that
warm, soothing bath.
Oh,
sounds
that sounds
nice.
Like a dream right now.
Now,
oh.
I have got two wicked Android picks for this week because I think, you know what? I got a couple different ones that have been helping me out. But before we get to those Android picks, we should say holla to our buddies over at GoDaddy.com for hooking us up with sponsorship of this week's episode.
Good point, Chris, because this episode of the Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest web host and domain name registrar.
Okay.
If you're ready to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has got you covered. Domain names as low as $1.99 plus world-class hosting with unlimited disk space and bandwidth, do-it-yourself website builders, dedicated servers, SSL certificates, and so much more. Plus, as a Linux Action Show viewer, enter promo code Linux. That's LINUX. Exit checkout and take an additional 10% off your entire order. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your PC internet now at GoDaddy.com.
Nice little jingle there, dude.
I just wrote the GoDaddy jingle, by the way.
And thanks to GoDaddy.
I expect royalties every time they use that.
Now,
it'll be the next Super Bowl.
I just got a message, actually, from one of our listeners, DLP211, said, don't forget about Linux 20. DLP11, you in the chat room are hooking us up with the remembrance. We appreciate
Linux,
that.
Linux 2.0, 20% off of hosting. Good deals.
Now, it's one of the things about Android is that it's a multitasker. And like operating systems that really aren't completely locked down, you can load up a bunch of applications. And you, if you are not careful...
Well, you mean, like, wait a minute.
Like an iPhone.
Every operating system since like the early 80s has been the
well,
way
no,
you
there's
described.
Either,
multitasking,
like,
you can load up whatever
no, no,
you want.
You see what happened was
even
like
handheld devices,
Brian, I'm telling
and
you,
everything.
Brian.
They all
no, dude,
do
like
that.
It's crazy. You're not even going to believe this. I mean, I know it sounds completely ridiculous, but like 3 years ago, there was an operating system that just came out, just a modern operating system, just released.
Yeah.
Did not even feature multitasking.
You're crapping me.
No,
right
no,
now.
No, I'm serious. No,
you
I
just took a giant crap
no,
in my
no,
chest.
No, no, it was a mobile operating system, and they said for you know mobile purposes they couldn't do multitasking. And then the other guys that had multitasking said, "Well, wait a minute."
Oh, I know what you're talking about. It must be one of those embedded systems that's just used for like controlling robots or something. It just has a command prompt. There's no like GUI display or anything.
You nailed it, dude. It's just used for controlling robots. Exactly.
Yeah,
so
otherwise, it would make no sense.
Right.
To not have full functional multitasking.
It's just, well, see, they locked it down because it's designed to be able to control millions and millions of mindless robots at once. So you have to have it locked down. But
well,
if
you got to have that locked down.
So one of the problems I had...
Well, come on. Don't be ridiculous.
As an iPhone switcher to Android is I went app crazy. I if you check my app brain profile, at one point I loaded like 260 applications in a weekend. I just went nuts. And, of course, that led me down the path where a lot of stuff was set to start at boot up. So there's a really nice program I came across that lets me continue to play with all the different apps, but lets me just hard set only these set of applications are allowed to actually start at boot on my Android phone.
That's cool.
So I can install 250 apps, but I know only these four programs will start.
So they're not all slowing you down and
eating
up all your battery life without you knowing.
So this lets you just go ahead and install away. So that's it's a free app. It's called Startup Cleaner 2.0, and I'll link to it in the show notes. And then I'll throw in a bonus app for the peeps out there with Xbox Media Center.
Oh, I do like the Xbox Media Center.
Oh, I know. And this app, what's so cool about it is it reads the Xbox Media Center's TV database, and you get little banner art of all of the TV programs on your Xbox Media Center on your Android phone. So you you can just browse through all the artwork, find the thing, and then it's even got episode stills, and then you click it, and then it starts playing on your Xbox Media Center.
That's cool.
And then it has a standard kind of control interface you can use, too, to just do some of the basic control inputs and stuff like that.
I dig that.
So, and that's from the Xbox Media Center project people, so it's the official app. It's a great app. And one of the other things you can do is, because it's on your phone, you can operate it in the dark, right? You can control your remote and the phone lights up and you can see it. So it's kind of nice from that standpoint as well.
Yeah.
It's a really well-done app, XBMC remote, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well.
And speaking of XBMC, I've actually taken to just running the Xbox Media Center on an Xbox, an old... Like, I have just this old Xbox. It is the greatest experience for that. I mean, I had, you know, modern consoles and set-top boxes and TiVos and everything else. This blows it out of the water. And the great thing is, you can get, like, old, hacked Xboxes for nothing.
Pre-hacked.
Go on Craigslist. You can get them for $60, $70.
And the other thing is they die less than the 360.
They do. Well, I've had this one Xbox all hacked up since Xboxes came out.
Yep.
A champ. Quieter than the
360. You just had a 360 die.
Quieter than the PS3. Yeah.
I've had a 360 die on me.
I've had two die on me.
That's fine.
And it is awesome. So it's super cheap. Running my main TV right now. The only downside is those original Xboxes, no HDMI.
Oh, right.
So you're not
going
to go high def. But Yeah, honestly.
It does component, though, so I think you can get up to like 720p.
You can get 720, yeah. But that's it. But still, that's plenty. That's just plenty. I mean, come on. After that, realistically, come on. Anyone who's going around saying, oh, I can't watch anything that's not 1080, you guys are ridiculous.
No, you know, I found just in my personal like viewing that TV and most movies, especially like with the PlayStation 3, it's a really good DVD upscaler.
Yeah.
You know, 720p works occasionally. I'll get like a Blu-ray, and that's like a movie watching experience, and I'll watch it on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, but that's like a special experience, like once every now and then. Like, for instance, this last week, the 25th anniversary of the greatest movie of all time, Goonies, came out with a special collector's edition. 25th anniversary, guys.
Yeah.
You get it on Blu-ray.
Did you see that Back to the Future is coming out on Blu-ray?
I did.
Oh, I want. Hey, you know, we should probably talk about Linux.
Is that the show we're doing? Oh, hell, let's dive into that.
All right, Brian, let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
Brian, our top story on the news docket for this week.
Just beautiful.
Jolly Cloud 1.0 is out. Now, it's been a long time since we talked about Jolly Cloud. I think over a year ago, maybe. Jeez, we reviewed it like a year ago, I think.
Yeah.
Totally new, totally revamped, looking slick as heck. I have no use for it, though.
It's like a whole different beast. It's basically, they've revamped it now, so the whole UI is all JavaScript-y. It's this big HTML5 is what
it's actually based on Chromium.
Yeah.
It's running Google Chromium. They totally took out the Ubuntu remix. And
yep. And now it's this web-based UI. It can still run desktop applications, you know, so you can still launch GIMP and Pigeon and everything else. But you're still, and they kind of have a theme to match their web page application launcher thing.
They did a custom GTK and Qt theme for Qt apps as well. And they've built in what's called now an App Center, which is cool. You can also use the new Jolly Cloud Sync service to sync your netbooks or Jolly Cloud desktop OSs. So if you install apps on one machine, the sync service will then push those apps to a new machine.
Other machines.
That's very neat.
It's a very cool feature. Yeah.
So why are we poo-pooing this subtly? Now, are you not very excited about this guy?
I'm very excited that it exists. I'm not excited at all to actually use it. I have no use for this.
Do you feel like...
And I want to have a use for this. I really genuinely do, because it's very attractive. They did a great job on the look and feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, look and feel isn't everything.
Now, why don't you want to use it? Do you not have a need for a netbook OS anymore?
I
just want to run a regular OS on your netbook?
I don't have a need for, a custom OS that's just a netbook OS.
I agree.
I just don't have that need.
I think since the time Jolly Cloud launched, that need for me... It's gone away. The resolutions of netbooks have gone up to such that I don't need a completely custom UI now to accommodate for what the technology was limited.
Yeah, and I think even more than that, I've realized that, stock KDE and GNOME really don't take up that much screen real estate.
Yeah.
Especially, like, you can make the bars a little smaller.
You lose too much in functionality.
Yeah, once you do that, you have a completely replicated experience on your desktop in a mobile form that is... totally doable, plenty fast,
sure,
and there's no real problem with it.
Yeah.
So I don't see what problem is they're trying to solve here.
I know,
I appreciate the work they're doing.
I do too. It's weird. I know there's probably people out there that still are really demanding a netbook OS. Part of it, I feel like netbooks have just sort of matured to more of a standard they're just an ultra portable laptop these days, really. And I wouldn't see this interface lending itself well to a touchscreen interface. So I guess I let us know in the comments if you guys are excited about Jolly Cloud, and if you guys would like to see a review. You know, we have the hardware, we could throw it up and give it a run.
If you're a nerdy guy or gal, I recommend taking a look at it because it is genuinely cool.
If you're going to run an OS with a custom interface that can run Linux apps, why not run MeeGo?
Well, that's the question. But then again, if you're going to do all that,
I guess the syncing service.
Why run MeeGo?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the same question. I mean, you want to get a distro, you want to get a version of Linux that's going to meet your needs, that you're going to enjoy running. It might be Jolly Cloud for you. For me, I see too many other options that more closely resemble my desktop
right.
or are my desktop OS
That's
that I just don't need. I don't need something like Jelly Cloud.
You more need the functionality of your desktop than you need a custom OS designed for the UI interface.
Yeah.
Moving on, it's kind of staying in this realm, though. Nokia came out and said, for Mego, now we already knew this. We've been talking about this on the Linux Action Show, but they just came out and said, QT, QT, QT. Much like Ballmer's, developers.
Yeah.
But they backed that up with saying, we're going to create a streamlined SDK that allows you to create Qt applications and submit it to our, I think they call it the Ovi store or something like that.
It's Ovi, yeah.
And,
or Ovi.
Yeah, Ovi.
They
so
want to say
they're really working on building a streamlined, you develop the application all the way to complete delivery in one specific interface for building Qt apps for Maemo, Mego, and Symbian.
Yes.
So.
That's great.
You gotta think this is great, right? You gotta be a big fan of this.
I have no problem with that. I mean, and really, there's nothing all that new in what they're doing. This is a kind of a pulling together of a variety of things that have already existed.
Right. Into an SDK.
We already had the Qt SDK. Already had Qt.
Right. This is they've just released this the other day. It's like some sort of
official pulled together mobile Nokia
with all
Qt
of the,
SDK.
That's
good.
Emulators and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it is good, right?
I dig it. I've got no qualms with it. I love that they're still officially supporting the N900 and the N905.
Right.
I like that a great deal considering that there's only one phone running Maemo 5 right now. I think that's very cool of them to do that. They got good tools. They got a good SDK. It's great for developers.
You happy with the choice of Qt for mobile development?
Oh, absolutely. I have no qualms with that at all. I mean, it's more robust and provides developers with more options than, say, making an iPhone app. You make an iPhone app, you use Objective-C and Cocoa. What else can you do if you make Objective-C and Cocoa? You can make a Mac application?
Right.
Well, sure. But if you want to sell to seven people.
But this one, you can make desktop apps.
You can make Windows apps and Linux apps.
And KDE is built on top of Qt.
Exactly. I mean, it's a good framework. Mm-hmm. It's tested. There's lots of developers out there. There's great examples for it. And it makes sense to really get behind
it's
Qt.
It's probably their best potential win because they didn't have to invent some new programming paradigm for people to have to adopt to develop applications.
No, they make minor modifications to existing code bases.
I mean, that's
mostly to adjust for compensate for screen size and UI differences, and you're done. And you use the same framework for developing all your applications.
It's an important good step, though, to really say not only before Nokia owned aspects of Qt, or I don't remember the exact details there. And they had these resources available. They had these forms, these sites, but there wasn't. I thought like there was this really kind of unclear message from Nokia from a public standpoint.
Yeah.
On the back end, they were doing all this stuff to support Qt, but then on the front end, from the PR and public facing side, they weren't really making a firm commitment. And I think now they finally made that firm commitment.
That's really what this is. Because, I mean, as a dev and as a nerd, we already knew. We already knew they were behind Qt.
Yeah, I mean,
we already knew they were firmly behind it. We knew that, like, Qt Creator came out after Nokia kind of purchased up Trolltech, the makers of Qt.
Right.
And Qt Creator is a great IDE, an awesome IDE, one of the best there is out there.
We covered it a couple of times.
It's phenomenal. They did a great job on it. And so they are obviously firmly behind it. Mm-hmm. And they're putting Qt on every platform that they make, which at this point is actually quite a few platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
So we already knew. But I like this public marketing presence they're giving to it. I like it.
It's
they
good,
did a good job.
It's good from a people who, and I don't take this as a slam for people that are fans of like the Twit network and things like that, but they kind of follow the Mego and the Nokia news from a really 50,000-foot view. And to them, one of the comments I had heard from that network was, well, how do you make any apps for Mego? Nobody's going to use that. Everything was there, but because that public, now people will know.
Exactly. People like in the Twit network obviously wouldn't know because they're not that plugged into this stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, I get it, and this is good. This also helps managers to help make decisions about what technologies to use.
Yep.
And hopefully those decisions will include things like C++ and Qt, so that us developers don't go out of our minds.
All right. Now, moving right along here on the news docket, just a quick mention. To follow up last episode's Android news, I think we kind of saw this one coming, but Android is now the number one smartphone OS selling. not too surprising here. I guess what is kind of surprising is just the time frame. They managed to beat BlackBerry now. BlackBerry now sits at 28% of U.S. market. Android now sits at 33%, and the iPhone now sits at 22%. This does mark the first time since Q4 of 2007 that any phone has outsold the BlackBerry. So,
way to go! Holy moly! HTC and Google and everyone else involved in the Android market, the market sphere O system. Good job!
Now
that's a huge feat. Huge.
Also, a follow-up from last week's news was we covered some of the details around Gnome Shell and where that's going. We've now seen an interface video crop up. Some of you might have actually been actually running the code of this.
Yep.
But now we're seeing a video to demonstrate to the viewers out there. And you see that in a lot of ways...
It's a short video.
In a lot of ways, it's very heavily... It reminds me of the Ubuntu Netbook UI. You find that immediately as upon launching applications, you're taken out of the UI and brought to a full screen of the application you launched. So even like Nautilus or Gedit, the application running framework goes away and you get left with just a bar along the top, which I actually think is kind of slick. And then you have a full screen version of your Nautilus window or whatever. I don't get the point.
Well, I think that's where we left it when we saw just the screenshot.
Yeah, so I threw this in my BuzzFeed. You know, I've been kind of pre-vetting these stories in Buzz, and people in there say the general consensus was this just feels different to be different.
That's kind of what I was thinking too. It feels like it's integrating in the general look that a lot of the netbook, like Netbook Remix and a lot of the netbook UIs. Mego has kind of some similar things in the UI. Jolly Cloud has a lot of those aspects to it. And they're just integrating that in, but I don't want that.
No.
I don't want that in my desktop.
You know,
I just don't. I don't see a need for it.
Why are we getting the netbook solutions today? We needed them 2 years ago, and now we don't need those anymore.
Now we don't need them anymore. We've moved past that.
It's like here in Washington State, we have traffic issues. Not the worst in the country, but they drive me crazy, you guys. I drive a lot. I sit a lot. I spent 5 hours in traffic on Wednesday, I think. That's more than half the day. Half the work day I spent sitting in traffic. And you know what they do is they wait till the traffic is so bad that it takes them 2 years to add a new lane. And by the time they finish adding those new lanes, traffic is just as bad.
Right.
That's exactly what we're doing in the UI department with GNOME 3. We're playing catch up to a problem that's no longer even being asked anymore. We have an answer for a question that's not being asked anymore.
Right.
It drives me crazy.
No, I absolutely completely agree. These are the moments when you got to take a step back and say, good job, KDE team, for kind of continuing on their vision and just sticking to their guns and making what they think they should make.
Yeah.
You got to respect that. I find that over the last 2 years, as these new UI paradigms come out, as, you know, a bunch of Netbook Remix and everything that followed after it has appeared, it's been exciting.
Yeah.
And I've run it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is a cool idea.
But you've never stuck with it, right?
This is a cool idea. But I've yet to stick with it.
Same.
And I'm very open to good-looking new UIs.
Yeah.
I'm easily...
We are eagerly seeking them out.
Oh, I want them.
Actively, yeah.
And I've found
I'm
that
totally the same way.
I'm slowly rolling back to stock GNOME, stock KDE.
Yeah.
Because I'm realizing that I need that full power. I need that full flexibility. And those systems that we deem as so heavyweight and so clumsy.
Well, they were built up like that for a reason over the years for our needs.
They're not actually that heavy or that clumsy. They're light. They're fast, they're elegant, they're full-featured, and they're highly customizable.
And highly evolved based on what we've wanted over years of time.
Exactly.
I know.
Are these systems, are stock GNOME and stock KDE so astoundingly difficult to use for the layman that we need these netbook systems?
And I will say...
Is that the only motivation?
In my experience, I've been doing IT support over 13 years, I think 14 years now, and initially I would have said, 14 years ago I would have said, oh my God, we need to give these people a completely different interface, take away the mouse, give them Apple's one-button mouse, oh my God, these people are so dumb, they cannot figure out how to use a computer. Today, I have people asking me about the best podcasts, I have people asking me about upgrading to Chrome. I mean, it is an entirely different user base later.
The world is different.
They're getting more comfortable with what's become a standard interface, because these people, even Joe users, they're on Facebook, they're on email, they're on all these different eBay, Amazon, they're using these computers, they're becoming comfortable with these interface concepts, and now we're trying to switch it on them?
Yep.
And if we're not switching it because we want it, as the IT people that are, as the technical people that are driving this, and they don't want it because they're finally becoming accustomed to it, why are we doing it?
Seriously.
Just to scratch an itch?
Seriously. And if you look at it, really, from a fundamental standpoint, stock GNOME and stock KDE, they're significantly easier to use than a Mac right now for a new user.
And generally, they use less memory.
And if you're a new user, and bear with me for a moment, if you've never used Mac or Linux before, which most people don't. Most people have it. Most people use Windows.
Windows
and that's
only.
All that they have used. Mm-hmm. They've heard of Mac, and some of them have heard of Linux.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
Now, if you sit them down at a computer, one with KDE, one with GNOME, one with the latest OS 10, and you say, "Open up the preferences to change your resolution of your screen." Well, in GNOME and KDE, it's fairly straightforward. You have a system preferences menu of some sort readily available. On a Mac, what in God's name do you possibly click? The silhouetted apple in the corner that looks like it's not even a button? Yes. And then you click on another? No, it's very difficult. So mm-hmm. from that point of view, we already have on the Linux side some of the most easy to use and easily discoverable systems in place.
Yeah.
Why screw with it? Why not just put some lipstick on these guys, make them look a little prettier. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you, dude. I do.
Just pimp up. I mean, if you put the right theme on top of GNOME,
yeah.
it looks gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely.
If you put the right theme on KDE, which, heck, I mean, it comes out of the box with a pretty nice one.
Yeah.
It looks astounding.
Yeah.
Plus the desktop effects, it's great. So clean it up a little bit.
Now, one of the...
Put some makeup on that nice red dress.
I guess
it's
feel like...
It's going out for the night. Put some heels. Not big heels. Just little ones. Makes your legs
look
better.
Don't be slutty.
Yeah, don't be slutty about it. We're not talking stilettos here, guys.
I guess, yeah.
We're not trying to go Windows 7 here.
I feel bad for the GNOME guys in a way because part of what has served GNOME so well is just the blatant disregard of listening to users in the sense of UI. Because for many years, we're like, good, you guys need to modify. You guys need to do big 3.0 upgrade. Of course, we were never like that, but a lot of users were. And no one was like, nope, slow and steady. We're going to just evolve. And you know what? I think it paid off. I think it worked.
It worked great.
I think they made the right decision. Maybe they're doing that again, and I'm one of the users that didn't think it was a good idea, and I don't know. We'll see where they're going. I have trusted them in the past. They've done a good job, but now I fear they're going down the wrong path.
I don't know. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt.
What I'm
just hoping is because they are.
Or at least the old interface stays available
GNOME
for a while.
GNOME 3, they're doing some great work in it. There is some great work going on. Part of it is the new GNOME shell.
Yeah.
That's only part. Now, the GNOME shell is going to be optional. The big thing that's going to make the difference here is, will the big distros, will Debian, will Ubuntu, will Fedora, will SUSE, will they.
Right.
Do you use that GNOME shell by default or just turn that off and leave it there if you want to turn it on?
I suspect that's the case.
Like a media center type thing. If you want to load it up, great. Now, if they go with that off by default and more of a standard look that we've got, maybe slightly refined, awesome. Then GNOME shell is just an interesting experiment, an interesting application.
But it's also stealing resources on building better and improving the GNOME 3.0 desktop outside of GNOME shell.
That's
true,
but without them building that, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
Good point.
So it pushes things forward.
It does. Yep.
But I am thinking, though, that it's not worth throwing all your resources behind, guys.
Yeah.
If there's one thing you want to fix up and make pretty, don't make it that. That's the bottom of your priority list.
Now,
the
way we like to do things here on the Linux Action Show is we like to disprove ourselves at the same time we're making a point. So in this episode, we've had a heavy news story, a heavy news docket, and so we're going to cover a story about the fact that Linux news seems to be dying. And I know this isn't exactly one of those stories people always like to hear on the Linux Action Show. We're bringing this up not as an attack, but as an open dialogue with you guys. We want to hear your feedback, why you think this is happening. But looking over at the trends... Actually, you know what? Let me step back. So
step back, Chris.
We've done the Linux Action Show for over 4 years now, Brian. And I have noticed in the last two seasons of the Linux Action Show, the news has really dried up. Like, I sit down before the Linux Action Show every night for three or four nights before Linux Action Show, and I really, really look for news.
Yep.
And I mean, I have to really look now. Before, I used to be able to just bring up open a few websites, get tons of news, and cherry pick what I want.
You know, honestly, yeah, there was a time during the first couple seasons of Linux Action Show where we could literally open up one random site, and there was like five or six big news sites out there. One random site, and there would be way more news that was awesome than we could possibly cover in a show.
So I thought maybe this was just... maybe I was looking at the wrong sites. Maybe I wasn't looking for the right thing. So I started doing a little digging. Now, if you don't know about this feature, if you go over to Google News Archive Search, Google keeps historical trend information of all of the news stories. So these aren't people searching, but these are actually news stories being published online that contain different keywords. So I took a look at things like the keyword Fedora. And if you look at the trending for Fedora, you'll see that on the chart, it starts in the year 2000. It's building all the way up. Peaks in 2008, and it's actually been on a steady decline since 2008. The same trend appears to be true with Ubuntu. It starts extremely strong in peaks in 2006, 7, and 8, and has been on a steady decline since then. Again, the same is true for just news stories containing Linux or discussing Linux. It starts high, peaks around 2007-ish, and then has been on a steady decline since then. It goes right back down.
Yep.
Across the board, Brian, I mean, news stories containing the phrase open source are down. And then also, if you look at actual search data, you end user search for terms like Linux, Ubuntu, open source, they're all trending downwards.
What's that green line right there that's going up?
That's Android.
Oh.
I know.
So what you're saying is Android
and that
is
little
spiking.
The purple dot is Mego just now starting to surface on the radar because it's so new.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's there.
I'll be damned.
So the question I have for the audience is Linux news dying? Or is it such that maybe Linux just isn't that new thing that people are writing? You know, early on, somebody pointed out, oh, by the way, I put this story in the BuzzFeed. Because this isn't a story. This is just something I kind of discovered. Threw that in the BuzzFeed. Oh, my God. You guys, the comments in that BuzzFeed are amazing. People wrote entire blog posts on this topic. If you're curious, I'll try to remember to put a link in the show notes. Amazing write-ups by our listeners. But a lot of people are mentioning, hey, you know, in 2006, 2007, a lot of people were writing articles, what is Linux? Ubuntu launched then. There was a lot of peaked interest. And now maybe just as the platform has stabilized and matured, maybe the initial interest is dying down. And maybe it'll sort of level off. Here's the other angle of this, is I've also noticed that the quality of news stories is down. Generally, I have found before each Linux Action Show, it's an active struggle on my part not to have an entire news docket full of Google and Linux, Google tangentially related Linux news and Android news.
Well,
I really have to work hard not to include all that.
And you know, if you really look around, you know, there was a point when we started. There was sites like we had Slashdot and you know, The Register and OS News and all these websites that we just had little tabs open. Boom. Just load them all up real quick.
Yep.
Look at the top couple stories and we've got a full docket of a show.
Yeah.
It is now damn near impossible to find a Linux story on Slashdot. Slashdot. The website that was built on Linux stories.
Yeah, if you go over to their Linux section, it's barren.
It's barren. It is empty. There is nothing going on over there. In fact, we'll have big stories. We'll break something really big here on the show. We'll be like, you know what? Let's put on Slashdot. Let's submit it over to Slashdot. Their moderators often will delete it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not submitted by us, even if someone else submits it. And if they don't delete it, often they will just mark it down, 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 and downvote it. At the same time, I kid you not, the same day we submitted some big Linux story. I can't even remember what it was.
Might have been some of the OpenSUSE build service stuff.
Yeah,
or something.
It was like something really big and awesome. I think it was the big announcement that OpenSUSE was making, and which was not covered at all on Slashdot, which is big news. Apple released a trackpad. That is the stupidest idea I've ever seen. They called it magic,
well, it is magic, Brian. And that's why it made
Apple,
the news.
And on Slashdot, that story upvoted through the roof, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, best thing ever!" Linux story downvoted and removed.
Now,
how Slashdot works.
Now, that sucks so much. But don't just put the blame on Slashdot, because if you look over at Dig right now, the top two stories in the Linux and Unix category on Dig are 10 days old. And 13 days old.
Yep.
That actually means there has been no top story on Dig since the last episode of the Linux Action Show.
Yep.
Now, some people will claim...
And what are those top stories?
They're Dell expands Ubuntu Linux desktop, and then Dell drops
Ubuntu Linux. Yeah. The dropping one is false to start with.
People might have noticed that the Linux Action Show did not even cover the Dell drops Ubuntu because... I followed up the rest of the story and I said, it's just a temporary thing.
It's a temporary thing in the UK.
In the UK only. Yeah.
It was a temporary UK website and modification.
And that was the top story for Linux on Dig. I mean, it's not a good situation.
So, and now people have been talking. So Dig is a good example. People have been talking about Dig and like, how come Linux thinks... Now, it used to be that, we'd come out with a big news story, put it on Dig, it'd go to the front page of Dig.
Some people say that there's an organized effort... on Dig to suppress Linux news. I think it's total bullcrap.
I think that's bullcrap.
I've read this entire article. Stephen Van Gaan, Nicholas, I'm disappointed in this article. Your entire premise is because there are no Linux stories on Dig, therefore it must be an organized group voting them down. No, there's been no good Linux news. No, I can tell you, I've been following Linux news very closely for four years.
I think it's more than that. I think the article's bullcrap. I think there is no organized suppression of any one news story. I mean, come on, it's stupid. And there's even conspiracy theories of, is Microsoft keeping Linux down on some of these social news websites? No, of course not.
No.
You know why Microsoft's not doing that? Because it would get in trouble.
Well, they don't need to. The news is literally, you can check Google News Archives, which is a collection of news stories on the internet.
And here's,
down.
Here's the thing.
But why?
It's more interesting than just Linux. Microsoft's having the same problem right now.
Mm.
Microsoft News is down.
Maybe people just aren't interested in the desktop computer space anymore?
It seems that way. The predominant thing that's pulling up in searches, the predominant thing that's pulling up on Dig, on Slashdot, is iPhone.
Yeah, well, iPad, and mobile stuff.
Apple mobile products.
You see Android trending up,
and
too.
And to a lesser degree, Google mobile products. But they're quickly surpassing them.
But that chart does show a little blip on the Mego radar. I mean, we could see eventually.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just seems that there is a big movement. Now, there's a big movement to people caring about the mobile space. I thought about this. I thought about this entire problem for Linux Action Show. And I thought, is this an issue for the Linux Action Show? Or are we going to be starved on news? We don't really have a problem generating our own news content. Like, we can get interviews with the OpenSUSE people.
Oh, yeah.
Our segment, we're going to talk about starting to build a home server. We can generate our own stories. I actually think a reduction in overall Linux news is a good thing for Linux Action Show because it positions us as one of the premier
places to get Linux news.
So I'm not worried about the show here. I don't think it's a show problem. I think it's a Linux community problem. I think distributions, project maintainers, you guys need to get out there and start promoting. We just talked to the OpenSUSE guys who are doing amazing work with their build service and the SUSE Studio, and nobody knows about it. You guys have got to get Fedora. You've got to get out there and tell people about all the great stuff you're doing with virtualization. OpenSUSE.
Here's the thing, though. I was hard on the OpenSUSE guys because I'm like, dudes, you're making this great work. Hell, you even have good designs.
Yeah.
Like, their artwork's awesome, their presentation, their UI, their technology, everything is quality. Everything. And yet, the word doesn't get out. I'm like, well, why is this?
I think it's a matter of they don't know how to work the system or something.
But here's the thing. We did a show about it. We did a show about the OpenSUSE build service and SUSE Studio.
That's true.
I then did a big blog post about it. A big blog post.
And it got voted down.
And we put it on Slashdot, on Dig, on Reddit. And people came along and are like, are you kidding me? That's horrible. Killed it. Hell, Slashdot deleted it.
There's just not an interest, I guess.
The editors of Slashdot said, there's a story about OpenSUSE. Delete it.
That's too bad. It's too bad.
When was the last time you've seen anything about OpenSUSE on Slashdot?
Hmm.
Ever. In years.
Maybe it's the Novell thing. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a complex problem.
They delete it.
I guess what we can do is leave us some feedback. Go over to jupitercolony.com or leave a comment wherever you're watching or listening to Linux Action Show. Let us know what you guys think because, honestly, it's starting to bother me because I've noticed it so much. I mean, it's really been an issue.
You do make a good point, though. In terms of getting Linux news,
we're going to be it. Yeah.
I mean, there are a couple of websites that are still hanging on.
Really good sites.
Good sites that are hanging on and doing their best. But most of the sites, the big podcasts, they're not even doing their research.
Those of us that are covering the Linux and open source world, we should try to be more organized together and try to help promote ourselves and each other because it's like we're getting, I don't know if we're getting silenced or if the interest is waning and people just aren't following. But in the public's eye, when you're not talking about something, it's dead. Like, for example, RIM and BlackBerry. If you listen to the news and all the other podcasts out there, the BlackBerry's dead. Okay? Well, obviously, RIM is not dead. It still has a huge market share. But if you listen it's to everybody huge. Out there, it's all about, you know, iPhone, Android, no BlackBerry at all. Perception eventually, over time, leads to reality.
And then you've got, exactly, and things like Nokia. Nokia is the largest handset maker in the world.
Yeah.
By a significant
I didn't even mention
margin.
Them.
We didn't even talk about them.
No.
Why? I don't know. Because the news decided that it's not important to talk about.
So I'm up for ideas and how we can...
Absolutely.
Yeah. One last story.
It is interesting, though.
Before we move on, I'll just mention a congrats to the Debian team. My first Linux distro that I really, really fell in love with was probably Debian. You know, I started in Mandrake, but...
You were a Gentoo guy for a while.
I was a Gentoo guy, but... I went from Mandrake to Gentoo, now to then to Debian, and then to Ubuntu, and yep. I just loved it. So Debian 6.0 version Squeeze has been frozen. They just got done doing the Libre conference in New York, Debian conference.
So there's a frozen Squeeze?
Frozen Squeeze.
Dude, I want a frozen Squeeze. That sounds delicious.
You know, you got to give it. This is so Debian, too. The original code freeze was planned in December of 2009. It got bumped to March, and now it just got frozen again, though the release date is still set for summer of 2010. So don't need to pump that, guys, I guess. You know, what? The great thing about Debian is Debian ships when it's done. And
yeah.
And a lot of people that use Debian stable, they don't want the new versions to ship. They're happy living on stable. You know, it works great for server OSs.
It does.
Congrats to the Debian team. And, of course, so many big distros are based off of Debian now that when these guys make
take their time.
Yeah. When they hit a landmark, every other distro associated with them will eventually also be hitting a landmark. So it's exciting.
It's way exciting.
All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news for this week.
As we mentioned last week, we want to talk a fair bit about building your own server.
Yeah.
Specifically from the software side of things. What do you want out of your home server for streaming your media to all your devices everywhere, for storing your files, for doing your backups, for handling your email and your downloads and everything else? What do you want, and how, using a Linux-based distro, are you going to be able to accomplish it?
Now, we've talked about the HP. What was the HP little unit we reviewed?
The Media Vault.
It's a Media Vault. Nice little unit.
Great unit.
Good hardware form factor, runs Linux, seemed to be pretty peppy.
Very, very peppy, very nice, very small, very quiet. We were very impressed with the HP Media Vault that was running Linux.
Now,
had a nice little web UI for administering it, but was limited on its overall functionality.
Well, first of all, that's just it. We thought about it because we want flexibility, and there's also other routes you could go if you want to build a home appliance. Like OpenFiler is awesome, you guys. If you want a home server and you don't really want to have to worry about setting up all of the software and stuff, OpenFiler is amazing. You've got to go check it out. It'll turn any hardware you have into an appliance storage device. That wasn't enough for me. I want to be able to do all kinds of different things on my server.
Yeah. I mean, a file server is great, and that takes care of the key critical stuff.
But I could just get like a Netgear media storage attached thing if I want that. Yeah, I have a Drobo. I could use a Drobo.
Yeah.
But I want something that I can run standard desktop applications on, for example, Dropbox. Because part of my workflow is on my home file server, I have a Dropbox running, and I can drop, say, like NZB files in there, and then it automatically starts downloading them from Usenet. So if I'm somewhere at a client and I need a piece of software or I need something on Usenet, perfect example. Oh my gosh, this happens every Linux distro release. I'm at a client, the new distro comes out. Well, I can't download it there. I'll suck up all their bandwidth.
Yeah.
Drop an NZB file in my Dropbox. I get home. I download it off Usenet sitting right on my hard drive.
Isn't that great?
It's great.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
I want to be able to run some desktop apps.
We do that exact same thing at home. Just for at home.
It's a nice little system.
You know, both me and my wife, we want to be able to share the same Usenet account and download items off Usenet.
And you don't know if she's connected or you're connected.
So basically,
you just have the server connected.
We have a server connect and we have a file share that's literally, we call it incoming. And create an NZB, drop it in there, it gets downloaded, and there's a new file section, a new folder on the server, and it just fills up with all the files.
Nice and easy. You and I have, at least, I don't know if we've talked about it on the show, but we've both used Hella NZB. A really nice web UI. Anything you can do with your file server to give it like remote access capabilities for yourself for managing it.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to put a link in here to SAB NZBD, which looks like a...
That's what I use.
Yeah, it's a newer, improved version of Hella NZB.
Hella NZB is dead. It's no longer being developed. It hasn't been developed in quite some time.
They say they'll update it if they feel a need.
Yeah. It really does work great. I mean, I have no issues with it. There's some great clients like Lotta NZB and whatnot on the Linux side of things that use Hella NZB still. Mm-hmm. But I've moved over to SAB. So my
server, I want to be able to have that. So I'm going to do. I want to be able to run certain programs. So that's a requirement. I also like to run a local DNS server just because I have so many machines on my home network that it's nice to be able to connect all of them by name. And so I run a local DNS server. And I want to have like SSH. I want to have a web page where maybe I can throw some photos up. I'd like to also, this is just way out there. I really like the ability to remote desktop into my home server. Maybe I'm at a client and I want to do something on a different connection. Something like FreeNX or something like that.
Yep.
Could be really nice. So those are kind of my requirements.
So that
anything
that,
on top of that that kind of you need for a
so
streaming media, right?
So I need to like be able PS3 to media stream server? Media out to my PS3 and my Xbox Media Center and
FTP
and all those items.
I want FTP.
I need FTP access. And I have one requirement on top of all these things that's a little weird.
Really?
I want to be able to run a BBS off of my home server and have it outward facing. So people could telnet into my system and play games and hang out.
Do you think like a virtualization?
I'll get into that a fair bit. So I've been working on a system for that a little bit over the last
while. That'd be so cool to run that off your home server.
But exactly. Basically, everything I need a server for, put that all right there on a home server box that's not too loud, that has lots of storage and lots of redundancy, away in a closet somewhere.
Mm.
You know, just where I don't have to think about it and I don't have to muck with it all the time. So that pretty much covers what I want to accomplish.
I think I got to go. See, I have to go. I have the hardware I have to use for a server is like nice server grade hardware, but it's very loud and very hot.
Yeah.
So what I think I'm going to do is I want to build my entire home server inside VirtualBox. I think what I'll do is load a base server OS, something maybe like Ubuntu long-term support or maybe CentOS, and then install just nothing, load VirtualBox, and then load my virtual server in there. I have an eSATA storage array, just like the one you've got at home, and plug it into my box. I think I'm going to make virtual disk images on there. Manage the storage inside VirtualBox and not worry about any particular RAID or how these disks are set up to present to the operating system.
Mm.
I'll just do it all inside VirtualBox. Not only that, but in VirtualBox, you can split out those VHD files into like smaller 4 gig chunks.
Yeah.
So that would make backup of my home server a lot easier because I could just go grab all those four gig chunk VHD files and I've got everything. And then when I get a cheaper, quieter, cooler server, I'll just pick up the virtual machine
and move it over.
And move it.
Yeah. That's really not a bad way to go.
And I can move it at any point as long as I've got the storage to go with it.
Yeah, see, I'm going a slightly different route. I've got a tower. It's cheap to build, so I'm going kind of the cheap to build.
Well, the nice thing about hardware is it's going to be faster.
Yeah.
So that's my concern.
So I'm going to go with it's a small tower, and I've got an external 5-drive eSATA enclosure because it was a fairly cheap eSATA enclosure. The drives were cheap to go with it, and they're all mismatched drives, though. So we're going to a series of mismatched drives all pulled together to have one
like LVM or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Use LVM and kind of pull together one big set of
storage
shares.
Pool. OpenFiler has, by the way, I should just mention. I know you and I aren't going with OpenFiler.
Yes.
But OpenFiler has some really slick disk pooling storage technology built into it. If you've got a bunch of mismatched drives, OpenFiler will pull them all up for you and make one large virtual volume.
It's astounding. It's a great little project.
But I have a series of mismatched drives myself. I think I got a whole batch of 1 terabytes, and then I got a couple of twos in there and a 1.5. And it's like no standard RAID setup is going to let you do that.
No, you got to do something a little funky.
I am concerned about doing it entirely in virtualization because I run, I'll link to it in the show notes, a free piece of software called PS3 Media Server. It's a Java application, and the name is PS3 Media Server, but it lets you stream anything in your media library because it does live transcoding to an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation.
Live transcoding.
CPU intensive.
Oh, man. It's
that's why I'm a little worried about VirtualBox.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried that that's actually even going to work because it's so CPU intensive.
I'm now, curious if it will because if it will, that'd be great.
I'm going to load it on two Opteron 2 gigahertz CPUs, so I'm thinking it will be sufficient, but you just never know inside virtualization if that performance overhead hit you're going to take will be just enough that's just too slow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if I built it all up and I've gotten to that point, what do I do? But I'm going to try it. So that'll be my build.
Now, out of luck is what you are.
Did you get a chance to play with the Seuss Studio?
I did. We
got our invitations like last night, and I went in there and I built just a couple of different things. I played around with the Seuss build service. If you guys haven't seen 2 episodes ago of the Linux Action Show, we cover that. I went in there and I said I want these things and these things, and did all this automatic dependency checking. The one thing that was a little crazy was there's just so much to select.
There's a ton of options.
Once they get the gallery going, where people are going to have pre-built images that you can base off of, that's going to be a lot nicer.
Save us a lot of work.
Yeah.
So I ended up going with kind of like a standard OpenSUSE 11.3 desktop, GNOME-based desktop, and I'm just kind of paring it down based on that and adding things.
I decided to go X11 only and then change my mind later on. Because then I thought, I'm going to want remote desktop. So then I went back and loaded it. I had chosen XFCE first. I thought, well, it's my server. I don't need full GNOME. But there ended up being
overhead on GNOME is so light.
I know. And then there ended up being package conflicts and stuff.
XFCE, I do not see the point. Unless you have 256 megabytes of RAMies.
Right.
Why on earth... You need to go with something lighter than GNOME.
I would see if I had a production server servicing a business need, you know, like end users, and I wanted to build a remote into it and keep my performance impact on the server as total light as possible, I could see XFCE working. But in my house, where it's just my wife and I don't care if I log in, start up GNOME, and it takes 20% of the RAM. I don't care. It's just us. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? So to me, the memory issue is not really that critical of a decision because RAM's cheap.
RAM is super cheap. I mean, that's the one thing. So I've got that little cheap server. You know, it's a single core. It's quiet, but or at least the CPU is. But it's a single core. But seriously, that's all it needs. I just slap in a few more gigs of RAM. Awesome. It should be good to go. The only part it might choke on for the server that I'm building is that live transcoding of video.
Right.
Luckily.
But if all your formats don't...
Format-wise, all my formats that I use are compatible across all the devices I use. So I might be able to get away with not using live transcoding of the video.
And that's the other thing is I could do is I could just, you know, encode before I put it up on the server. And I do that sometimes just to...
But that's an extra step for you. You're trying to make it as easy as possible for you.
Exactly.
What about this? What about having a background task that re-encodes... stuff from a folder that you drop a file into a folder when it sees it in there.
I like that.
Re-encodes it and then places it.
Little command line FFmpeg action going on.
Yeah, just take care of it for you.
Absolutely, dude.
And make it so it's a really low priority. Does it? It's in the background.
Hey, you know what? There's already an Adobe Air application that sits on top of Handbrake and can watch a folder. And when a file sits in there, it uses Handbrake to convert it to a. Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
that'd be not bad.
So I went into Seuss Studio. I built my first pass system. It was just a test. I think we'll build something, put it together in the next episode. And then
let you guys have at it if you want.
And so when I built mine, one of the nice things you can do in Seuss Build Studio is you can upload your own packages and RPM files. So I have already pre-uploaded Dropbox. I've already pre-uploaded PS3 Media Server, my Usenet client. All that stuff's all ready to rock. It's really cool.
Isn't that cool?
And then in the Seuss Build Service, in Seuss Studio where you can build
an appliance. Was Dropbox the first package you uploaded?
Yeah,
me too. Yeah. I built it. First thing I did, Dropbox. How can you have anything without Dropbox?
You can subscribe in the Seuss Studio where you're building your virtual machine or your install CD, you can subscribe to build service repos. So like the most freshest packages where people are building stuff using the build service, you can subscribe to that in your Seuss Studio build. So that way I have like the latest Python, the latest VLC player, all this
everything right in your distro. Every time you go to build it, boom, you got the latest.
So
cool.
I already have today, I mean, I have like this VM image that I could go download right now and rock. I could load this theoretically in VirtualBox and be ready to go.
Yeah, and you'd be part of the way there.
That's cool. I'm just going to tweak it some more, and then I'm going to utilize their take it for a test run service inside the studio to sort of try it out,
and
see what
works.
Run
it in the web page.
Yeah, run That's it inside cool. the freaking web page. Make sure everything's the way I want it before I download it. I mean, I just love it.
That's awesome.
It's going to be fun.
That's awesome. I'm going to end up having a couple of different images around, but I'll have my one base image that I'll build with SUSE Studio. That'll be my core server, and then I'm going to have one that's going to be my BBS server.
Now, are you concerned at all about basing your server off of a non-Debian based distro? Because you know, a lot of our servers have always been apt managed and things
I'm
like that.
Not concerned about it. It's been done plenty. It's not my thing. I mean, I'm a Debian guy. I'm used to the
Debian
tools.
But being able to pre-tweak it with this studio is nice.
Hey, there's the thing. It's just so handy. And honestly, once I get it working, I'm done.
Yeah, and this does like all of the dependency checking for you and make sure the packages don't conflict. So you're not – I was worried about getting it and then needing to add one more thing. And so, like, for example, the PS3 media server needed certain Python bindings. Or no, maybe it was the Usenet client.
Sure.
And I would have been SOL, but I was able to
just re-add that in.
Exactly.
You don't have to and click rebuild. I mean, it's super easy to add additional packages.
Pretty cool.
So why not?
Yep.
So that's kind of what I'm going to go with.
I like
it. Yeah. So after next episode, maybe we'll see if we can get those published to the gallery, so you guys can check out our server builds. You can
That'd
check
cool.
out mine and Chris's. See which one you like better. We'll build them competing here head to head.
They'll probably be
Chris
exactly
will be over
the
there.
Same.
I'll be over here. They probably will be. They'll have like two different packages.
We do basically the exact same thing.
I know. But one will be the Lunduke server. Right. One will be Chris server.
Yeah, there you go.
Or something.
All right. Well, that's
maybe people should vote on them.
We could.
Which server is more awesome?
I think they're going to be so identical. I don't really know what they'd vote on.
They're going to vote for me.
Okay.
That's what's going to happen.
All right.
That's
all
what
right.
I'm saying.
I think that'll be. I think that's part one of our home server build. Tune in for part two, where we'll actually generate the VM, and maybe I'll even bring some hardware out here, and we'll fire one up.
Oh, that'd be rad.
That'd be cool. All right, Brian, that's our look at home servers.
Thank God. That brings us to the end of this week's broadcast of the Linux Action Show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Yeah,
it was, as they say, lots of fun.
Powerhouse, as they say.
All right, so what do we got coming up? We got next week we're going to be talking more about server stuff.
Yep, we'll do that.
We'll do the server builds. I think we're going to be talking some like, kind of like new Linux converts, maybe. Is that kind of maybe in the works?
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe that's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not told things.
Well, I think...
I'm in the dark over here.
I think we'll all be in the dark until the next episode, Brian. That is the tease, if you have
is
one right
the
there. That's quite a good tease.
I don't have a tease.
Hey!
That's all I got.
I gotta say, fist bump, powered through it.
Oh, man.
The man over here is sick. He did
gonna,
it.
I'm gonna go home, and I'm gonna take pills. And you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna lay on the couch. I'm gonna watch Tron.
There you go. Now,
how many times have I watched Tron the last couple of weeks?
Should we warn people?
Know. Many times.
Brian's all pilled up in the mornings, so Lunduke Files might not be airing
the
next part.
No
next week.
Jupiter Files all last week. We'd hoped it would be coming back. It didn't. Honestly, I'm in more pain in the morning right now.
Yeah.
So I get up.
Seems to affect
and,
people.
Yeah, it'd be a bad show. I kind of just decided one morning I got up and I looked at myself and I'm like,
said no.
You know, my voice is okay. I could talk, but I'd be grumpy. I'd be like, aliens, fuck, and just start cursing.
So head over.
So
probably your Twitter feed is probably the best place to find out when it's going to come back.
Yeah, Twitter.com/Brian Lunduke, or just check the Facebook.com/Jupiter Broadcasting. I'll announce it in both those places the day it's back.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be sure when you're feeling good and you're coming back, we'll give it a mention on Jupiter Night too.
Oh,
night
it will be the triumphant return of the Jupiter Files. And here's the thing: there have been so much. I don't want to say ridiculous news, but there have been some things that have happened over the last week or two involving aliens and the like that have been, they've given me the giggles. Let's just put it that way. And I want to talk about them.
Did you see?
I hope I'm feeling good.
Did you see we did the history of internet porn last Thursday on Jupiter Night?
I saw that.
Yeah, that was fun. And then we did a couple of different ones. We did a look at the Death Con and Black Hat conferences,
yeah,
and talked about some of the exploits. They came out with this ability to monitor basically all GSM phones for $1,500 using Asterisk and a few other open source tools.
Yeah.
So we covered that. I think that was like Monday night's
cool.
episode of Jupiter at Night.
Yeah, that's a cool one. I recommend checking that one out.
There
and, of course, you know, the porn one.
Porn one is about porn.
It's about porn.
Yep.
It's porn and history. So if you like the History Channel and porn, It's pretty much that.
It's kind of that.
That's what
on
that
the
is.
Internet.
On the so
not censored, but also not going to get you in trouble at work. We try to walk that line.
Were you family friendly on that
we
episode?
We tried to walk.
I didn't watch it yet.
We tried.
I didn't watch it yet because you know there was children present, and I was like, I don't
want to watch things about porn.
I don't want to watch things about porn because I don't know.
It's been a well rated episode of Jupiter Night. Funny how that works.
Yeah. Strange. More new Jupiter Broadcasting viewers than ever before.
Watching an episode about porn. Okay, guys.
We should have a porn show.
Well, yeah. I mean,
the porno action show.
This week in porno
you know,
action
it should just be action show. Just call it that.
The action show?
Yeah. Or get action show.
Get action show.
Yeah. Something along those lines. Let's see. Do we have anything else going on?
No. And we launched a new show, Northwest Goofballs, all about football. And episode 2 just came out.
Yep.
That's cool.
Come on. There's some Linux users who like some football.
I would suspect.
Maybe not a lot of you.
Yep. It's a great, it's an audio only show. It's a great for commuters and stuff like that. And then once the football season lights up, right now they're doing like their picks and all that kind of stuff. They just did an Easter
preview.
Getting
ready for the fantasy football stuff.
Yeah. But yeah. When the show comes up, these guys are going to go nuts. So if you want to geek out on football, check out Northwest Goofballs.
That is a great thing to do. Also, if you're interested at all, I wrote up a blog post over on lunduke.com of my way of ditching cell phones entirely. Just kind of curious what people think about this. I'm getting rid of my cell phone, going the whole, you know, WiMAX plus Skype plus Google Voice.
I'm nervous.
Kind of mixture.
I suspect. I think it still needs time, but I want to do it. I'm waiting. But
we'll find. We'll
you're
find
supposed
out.
To give me the itch.
I kind of gave my step by step of how I'm doing it. And I'm getting rid of, actually, I still have my cell phone service turned on. My drop dead day for turning it off is Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm slowly transitioning everyone over because I didn't want, you know, people to call my number that I haven't told them.
Oh,
it's turned
yeah.
off yet.
I wish Google Voice would let you port your number.
Yeah. That's the only downside is I can't port my number to Google Voice from my cell phone. So so it's taking a while, but by Wednesday I should have everyone over and I'm going to be full time. So for the next Linux Action Show, I'm going to let people know. How it's going for the first week. First full week of no cell phone.
That's lunduke.com.
Over at lunduke.com. And of course, if you're over there, you can check out Illumination Software Credit too if you want.
How's that going?
It's going great. I've of course been, you know, kind of out of it the last 2 weeks. So I haven't been a lot of new beta releases, but it's doing great. People are loving it. People are making really weird apps with it.
Stuff you didn't expect?
Someone made a website that is a dating simulator. So, like, you remember those old like DOS and Linux command line based things? Like, hey, how are you? And you type in a response like, "I'm fine. Would you like some wine?" And it would come back to you with like, "I don't like wine. This date's over."
And I try to swear at it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It was those sort of have a conversation things. Someone made one of those, except it's like buttons. So you go into it and you have options, like, you know, open the door for her or open the car door or take her to a movie. And someone made a big old date simulator in it and put it online and sent me the project over. And I took a look at it and it is huge. It is this convoluted logic of tracking whether you open the door,
whether you
open the door and what you said to her when you first saw her, and if you did that, but then you got her popcorn instead of jujubes, then this happens.
Oh my gosh.
It is astounding. This guy spent forever on it, and he did it all under Linux with Illumination Software.
He should probably go out and get a date, though.
That's part of the conversation that he and I are having right now. I'm trying to encourage this young man.
It's like, good work, dude. Now go outside.
Actually, I think it's an older dude. I think it's like a dude who played around with one of those when he was in college.
Absolutely.
And he thought it was cool.
That makes sense.
And he's trying to remake it.
That makes sense.
But so I've been impressed. People have been making a lot of cool stuff under Linux for web and for everything else. So you know, hey, if you're interested, RadicalBreeze.com, LineDuke.com, those sorts of things. That's all I got in terms of self-promotional plugs today. That's it. I don't got anything else.
I think that just about wraps up this episode of the Linux Action Show.
You
know, we come out every Sunday over at JupiterBroadcasting.com. Also, we are live Sunday mornings around 10 a.m. Pacific. We go live, sometimes a little earlier, just to chat with you guys. You can check that out. Also, check out...
We're doing that right now, actually.
We are doing that at this very moment.
This very moment, that is what we're doing.
If you want to join any of the other shows as we do them live, go to jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar. Rekai in the chat room mentions that's where you could join the Northwest Goofballs every other Tuesday night. And he says they're really nice two football noobs in the chat room. So check that
out. That's fantastic.
Okay, everyone. Well, thanks so much for watching this episode of the Linux Action Show, and we'll see you next week.